you can actually learn a ton in the corporate career that really help you as an entrepreneur. So don't think you need to jump out at 19 years old. Like, one of my biggest advantages is I did 20 years corporate.
As a structural engineer, I took that skill set and worked for a developer who was a real estate, you know, building projects. I had a skill set that could continue paying me a corporate wage, and I could learn on the job to build the skill set to go out and start my own business. And that is important. Having a little bit of time in the corporate world will only make you better. It actually expands your networking, because usually the first couple of investors in your startup, in your business, and whatever it is, are going to be guys from the water cooler who work with you and trust you and understand that. Some of my biggest investors are guys I used to work with.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com.
Today on the show, I had the pleasure of speaking with Michael Frew. Now, Michael is the owner and operator of multiple seven-figure businesses and digital business acquisitions and operations expert. He encourages and educates other engineers and IT professionals about the career choice of online business acquisitions to help them grow their financial future. I'm really pumped and excited to have him on the show today to share his incredible insight and knowledge with us. But enough enemy, let's get him out here. G'day, Michael. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here. This is going to be awesome.
My pleasure. Now, I like to ask all my guests who come on this show, rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid.
Right. Fantastic question, because I do think that really helps with understanding someone's financial literacy a little bit from where they came from. So for me, it was landscaping, doing projects around my house, doing projects around other people's houses. Grew up in New Jersey, so some snow shoveling. So a little bit of trying to do salesmanship. But at that age, you know, everyone is going to say yes, because who can say no to a kid? That was kind of the first real money, and grew up from there doing the same type of internships and summer jobs, and probably a pretty normal path. I never have thought that I was like those entrepreneurs that were having a product or a service when they were 5 years old, and you know, and that journey that many have had and said, you know, I was doing this since I was a kid. I feel like I'm a pretty normal person that kind of got into the career at a normal pace.
Yep. And what was that career as you look back on life and the story before the entrepreneur?
Right. So I started as an engineer coming out of college, and so did software development and moved into consulting. And so both of those two really enjoyable, but I did hit a couple points where I had what I like to call quarter life crises. And so this is where you kind of wake up one morning and you quit your job because you just know, I knew it wasn't my long-term mission and it wasn't my long-term passion, but I didn't know what that was going to be. So I had two of these in my career where I would just stop working and try and reassess what I'm doing. Both times I went back into the software and into the development world, but with a new point of view and kind of a new twist to it. And after 20 years of that is kind of where I reached the point where I wanted to acquire basically the same projects I was working on in the corporate world and run them myself as my own boss, instead of doing the exact same project with a boss and I had no passion or care about it.
Walk me through what type of businesses are you referring to here when you're saying about, you know, SaaS and online products? You know, we talk a lot about on this show about physical assets, real estate, multifamily, self-storage, mobile home parks. Like, what are you talking about on the digital side of it?
Right. And that's the biggest difference, right? Because I don't have a hard asset when I own an online business, whether it's a content site or even an Amazon site. You don't have that same physical land and the building and everything. And so that is a bit of a riskier venture. But the type of businesses that I like, when we say SaaS, so that's obviously software as a service. I think everyone's familiar with the fact that everything is turning into something as a service. Even your car wash is becoming a service. So this is something as simple as like a Netflix or Amazon Prime example of a service. So I really, personally, I enjoy cloud infrastructure. I enjoy buying software projects that are engineering tools and things that are helping other developers like myself. But other people like me in the acquisition space, usually they specialize in something. Maybe they specialize in Amazon FBA. Maybe they specialize in running certain types of e-commerce sites, or they do advertising sites. And so we all look, there's brokers just like there is for real estate. We work with the brokers. They know what kind of businesses we're looking to acquire. reach out to us. We do the same kind of bidding war that you do in real estate. We have the same due diligence steps. And then hopefully you acquire it and run yourself.
Yep. You mentioned Amazon business. Coincidentally, my wife and I are looking at some of them, you know, just as a side hustle. Is it products selling on Amazon, or you're talking more about a service? Like, describe, you don't have to tell us the exact business, but just describe what the service is, you know, the SaaS product is, the, you know, for the layman listening right now.
Absolutely. Well, the answer is kind of both. So there are a lot of Amazon businesses that do sell products that come up for sale. That's actually quite common. And then there's also services to help sellers, right? So if you do have your own physical product, there's tons of services to help you with your reviews. There are services to help you figure out the competitive prices. So if somebody writes a SaaS product that helps you with that, so that's another business that you could sell, you could acquire. So you can almost vertically integrate yourself. Let's say you already are a seller and you're selling a few things that you enjoy working with, and then you can have your own software that does competitive analysis, and then you can have customers from that. So you kind of build your own vertical chain. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about acquisitions, is you kind of build your own small little conglomerate.
Yep. Well, the one thing that comes to mind is my wife and I, a couple of years back, looked at Jungle Scout, for those people who are familiar with Jungle Scout. And if you're not familiar with Jungle Scout, it's a, you know, probably, what I want to say, 5-6 years ago, we looked at trying to start like a baby placemat thing. You know, you contact someone in Asia who's a manufacturer of silicon plastics, and, you know, you get a mold set up, you get some test things, you know, products sent across. And then the way in which you find the products is using these softwares like Jungle Scout, who then go and assess a product's ranking, right? And I don't want to give away all the special sauce, but, you know, ultimately you're looking for stuff that is underserved. You're looking for things like we look in the real estate world. You look at that, the ugly house on the block, and how can you add value to it? So it's like, look at the ugly website, look at the ugly landing page. What do they have good reviews and all this sort of stuff? And it comes back to say, okay, this may be a niche product that you could dominate in, even if you just know how to market better. You may not have any love with the product, but you may just know how to put out a better advertising front, and that attracts customers, and thus that attracts, you know, grows a business.
Absolutely. That's perfect. That's a perfect example.
So on the SaaS side then, because I've looked at physical products, right? Given your background in software engineering, are you looking for, like, you know, and I happen to be a structural engineer, or former structural engineer, recovering, as they say. Do you look for inconsistencies in software to make it better, like the actual product itself? Or are you just more looking around that sort of marketing and branding and getting it out to a bigger audience? Thus, you know, the widget's already created. You're just now flogging the widget itself.
Right. Yes, I see. I see the way you're asking the question. What I usually see is, if you think of the business life cycle, you usually have an entrepreneur that comes up with a software idea. They're probably scratching their own itch, solving a problem that they have. So they grow that, and as an entrepreneur, they want to work on the next project, right? So a couple of years ago, it was working on your own NFT. That now it's all of a sudden you want to work with ChatGPT. So they're jumping from place to place. So they need somewhere to sell that business. So they would sell it to me. So I'm kind of the second step on that business life cycle. And so then I become kind of the operator of that. So for me, what I usually find is the business started with an engineering mindset. It has no marketing. It doesn't really have sales. It doesn't have a lot of customer interaction, no white papers. So I look at it and say, this is a completely functioning business. It has proven market fit. It's got, you know, the website running. Everything is working. It just really needs some marketing juice. So then I'm kind of that second level where we help scale the business to the next level up. And after a few years and you grow the business, I'm looking to sell it to maybe a smaller PE firm or another investor a little higher than me that wants to operate it and make it even larger. So that's a little bit where I fit. So kind of to answer your question is, we expand and scale out some of the smaller things that a younger or newer entrepreneur isn't going to do with their business because it's not something they really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Proven market fit. That's an interesting concept when it comes to a SaaS product. How do you go about understanding the landscape? If it is obviously you're going to have customers, but then the future demand, like if you go put fuel on a fire, but there is no fire, you're just putting petrol on leaves. It's not doing anything, right? Like it's, you need the demand there to make sure that you can, you know, there's runway, there's value to be added. How do you go assess that? Because that's really important when you're looking at any business.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of engineers that, because we invest in a lot of real estate, that are listening to this, and they will probably laugh when I say all of us have so many failed projects that we've started. My archive folder hundreds of domains of projects I thought I would do, all these projects that never had that product market fit, never had any fuel to put in that fire. And so if you can't solve that problem and you throw as much Google AdWords as you want at there and you're wasting money on advertising, obviously the business isn't going to go anywhere. But once you figure it out and you do start getting customers that aren't just your mom and your friends, and you can kind of refine that process, yeah, you can really throw some money at it, and that's where it'll really grow. And so I'm trying to look for businesses that have kind of proven that already, that, okay, this business can grow as long as we do the right steps kind of going forward.
Do you look at any specific metrics when you look at these businesses to say, aha, I see it? And with that, do you use your own SaaS product to assess that so it's easy at fingertips? Because a lot of the times we want this information to make educated decisions, but we don't want to spend the hours, doing the background. We don't want to be able to like click that button. How does that work? And then kind of quickly assess, is there a demand here?
Yeah. So SaaS really has a set of metrics that I think are pretty universally used, easy to understand. So everybody cares about what's the monthly revenue and it's recurring revenue, which is fantastic, or annual recurring revenue. But then you look at customer acquisition cost, right? Long-term value for each customer. Those are what can set your advertising budgets. That's how you help know how it's going to grow. So there's a certain set of metrics that definitely SaaS uses. And then, there's some acquirers like myself. Some of them will put everything right into a spreadsheet and it'll tell them yes or no. And then there's others that, and this is kind of my perspective of, would this project be fun to run? That's the first thing I care about. And then, okay, does it make money? And can I throw some gas on the fire and make it bigger? So, we all have different things, but yeah, SaaS has its own metrics because it's got that recurring revenue model. It's very different than you would find for an e-commerce site or most other online businesses even, but it probably is a little bit closer to a real estate situation because it is kind of a recurring model that is very similar to rent.
Yep. You're looking for that monthly subscription-based model, right? When you're getting your customer on the back end.
It's so nice not to hit the first of the month and then wonder, what am I going to have this month? I know on the first of the month within 95% what I'm going to make revenue-wise. And that's fantastic. And I can probably tell you within 80% what I'm going to make for the whole year right now. So I could already look at 2025. And, we're in early January 2024, at least knowing that. And that's very different from sales. It's very different from other types of businesses. But real estate is very similar. If you have 12-month rental agreements, all right, for this period of time, what I'm going to be making.
Do you have people on your team to increase those sales, numbers? Like I'm thinking about, you mentioned, okay, you've got a recurring revenue of a subscription-based product, but you need to go out and get more eyeballs on it. You need to go out and explain the product to more people. Who's on your team doing that?
So we keep marketing people on there. So coming through social media channels. What I like to do is get into the engineering places where all of our customers hang out. So most of my customers are other engineers, other developers. So we stay in the community. And so it's word of mouth. Basically, it's product-led sales. And so, yeah, having the stereotypical marketing piece is perfectly fine. But, there's a genuine feedback, I think, when you are in the community and you can speak from experience. That really is probably the best product testimonial that you can possibly get. So, but that's different for each type of business. That's just unique for me because I like engineering companies to own.
Yep. No. I think it's very niche, right? Because it goes to the point that you don't have to put up a lot of competition and you kind of probably know who your competition is, right? Across many different sizing. Like on the real estate size, like we buy between $10 and $30 million deals at a time. What sort of size rev and EBITDA are you looking to acquire in terms of the business right now?
Yeah. So it can span the whole spectrum for your listeners. If you only have enough money to buy a five-figure software business, like it's out there. There are brokers that deal with that. So for me, I look for the mid sixes to the low seven figures. And so each monetization model in online business has a different valuation model. So if you're doing something like, let's say, content, especially after the release of ChatGPT, where AI is doing a lot more content writing, the multiple for those has dropped quite a bit. So you can look anywhere. And again, this changes every year. These multiples were different when the interest rates were different just a year ago. But let's say it's between 2 and 3. So you're saying 2 to 3 times your annual net revenue, which we call seller discretionary earnings. And then on the far side, the other direction with higher multiples is usually SaaS because of that recurring revenue model. That can go anywhere from 3.5 up to 7, 8. And sometimes it can have a split between seller discretionary earnings, which is basically your net income, or if it's growing really fast, it'll actually be a multiple of revenue. So it has nothing to do with your actual earnings. So it can get a little tricky on the SaaS side of which, what are we talking about when we're talking about multiples? But yeah, it spans that spectrum. So if anybody's looking in beginning and yeah, even four and five figures, but you can get up to six, seven figures. When you start getting into higher sevens and eights, you start bumping into smaller PE firms. They're very professional, but they don't have the personalization part to it. So if you're selling a little bit on your personality, it can work at that level as well.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, one of the websites for those people listening and just I've been looking a little bit is called Flippa, FLIPPA.com. You can jump on there. That's a pretty much a hosting service for e-commerce or through SaaS, through content pages. You mentioned revenue multiples. And I know just by looking at Flippa a little bit, they do both revenue and profit multiples. So do you mentioned what type of revenue multiple you like to see or what's was sort of within the, you know, within the train track, so to speak, of like you're not overpaying, you're not underpaying. What is that on a revenue multiple for a SaaS product typically?
I hate to say it depends, you know, and that's it's the worst answer. But yeah, I definitely have a range. So if I'm looking at an SDE, which is like a net income, I'm looking at 4 to 5x. Okay. If you're looking at annual, it's going to be a little bit lower, but it also has to have a pretty high level of growth. You have to be able to see profitability in the future. And that also has to be the type of business you want to run. Personally, I'm not as comfortable running a business that loses money. So for me, I'm usually looking at, does this thing make money? Is it paying me back in those 3 or 4 years? And if I can accelerate it a little bit faster. So it really comes down to what your risk appetite is. Are you looking for a hockey stick growth startup? Or are you looking for something that's more of a cash cow? It's very steady growth and you can rely on it. And sometimes it's nice to have a collection of those, right? So your real estate portfolio is going to be the same thing. You have some very steady, always cash flowing properties. And then you might have something where you're putting a little bit higher risk, but for a higher reward.
Speaking of, you know, what we do on our side is portfolio building, right? Buying multiple assets. I assume you are also in the asset building, portfolio building space, right? So you're buying multiple businesses. Are you buying multiple businesses that look the same, or are you buying multiple businesses that feed one another, or both?
It almost depends on what level we're talking about. So one of the better things to do is to look to acquire a software business that has a very similar tech stack, because then we can have the same people all working on the business, even if on the front end, the business is completely different. So in many ways, my businesses are not related at all, but the tech stack is very similar. So the same team can work on it. We just know that on the front end, we're advertising a couple different things, but that also doesn't diversify it as much. So like you said, you also want to kind of look at things that would be completely different, a different model or something that does can be a customer of your own business as well. Mm-hmm. And so you're right, kind of building that portfolio based on what you see on the marketplace and what your risk tolerance is. You can kind of customize it yourself, which again, just like real estate, is really nice that you can tie it into your own risk profile and your own goals and your own time horizon.
Yep. Are you typically looking for a buy and hold, a buy and sell? Are you flipping these things within 2 to 3 years? Like you mentioned, you're that sort of infancy to sort of probably, child adolescent stage before passing on to someone who's going to take it into the adult stage.
Yeah. I always say, the entrepreneur takes it from 0 to 1. So I take it from 1 to 10 and then I sell it to, 10 to 100. So for me, I'm a buy and hold. There are other people that really like to buy, double the revenue and flip. And that is their specialty. There's others that, you buy and you hold for 4 or 5 years and then you sell. I have so far been very strong in the buy and hold. With SaaS businesses, with that recurring revenue, the math is very hard to ever make it look like you should sell. Because you can, even if you look at a 5% decline every year, you look at all that money you would make over time. And it's very hard to capture that in one sale. So if you need to take some money off the table, sure, do a sale. But if you can hold it for a while, it's still a pretty good deal, at least from my point of view as a SaaS business owner. So everybody has their own style. I'm a little bit of a buy and hold, but probably not forever. Software is not probably going to be business models that's, stay viable forever. They're probably going to have a shorter life than, a brick and mortar business. So at some point I'll have to sell. But for me right now, it's a kind of a buy and medium to long-term hold.
That's an interesting point you bring up there about technology and being obsolete. How do you keep your finger on the pulse of whether your products are, whether your SaaS products are still relevant, does ChatGPT come and blow it up? Technology changes so quickly. So how are you keeping in front of it, looking at the portfolio saying, this wave is losing steam and I need to get out?
We've had a few moments like that in the online world here. Obviously, ChatGPT was a huge change, and a lot of people suddenly realized the half-life of my business is very short. You know, it really hurt a lot of entrepreneurs that were doing a little bit maybe lower hanging fruit projects. And so that's a big change. There was also a large group of aggregators that bought a bunch of Amazon sites, and they overinvested. You've probably heard about this. They overinvested. They didn't have the operational capabilities, and they really crashed that market as well. So staying ahead of that can be very challenging. ChatGPT for this last year has been a real struggle to figure out, if I'm investing in this business, can I resell it in 3 or 5 years? And that's very hard when you look at the pace of things that have changed in the AI world, to extrapolate that out 3 years and think, where are we going to be? And can this business still run at that time? So you're right. You know, it's a bit of a struggle. I'm fortunate that many of the businesses that I have, they're not very low hanging fruit. They're pretty resource intense and as far as people have to do it, but it's going to get there. So yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, you got to keep your eye on for sure.
Pivoting and talking about your team, you mentioned tech stack before, and for those people it didn't catch on, it's just people who come and help run the business. So what does the quote-unquote tech stack look like from your employees and people who run the everyday business? Do you have a COO? Do you have virtual assistants? Like, what does that look like?
So I probably do what you're not supposed to do. I actually really enjoy running the businesses. Like I said, my first criteria is this thing something fun to run? Is this something that I find rewarding, or is it the customer base that I enjoy, or is it a cause that I like supporting? So instead of running, you know, on the business, I'm kind of in the business quite a lot. So in that way, I guess I'm the COO and the CEO of it. And I stay pretty involved, and I stay around in the customer support as well. So I kind of get that read of what's going on in the market. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I try and make sure that the people that are working are specialized in what they're doing. So the marketing, kind of the CMO person, is going to be completely marketing. I'm no good at that. And I'm hopefully smart enough to offload those chores to that person. Then you have, your technical team, multiple levels with them, and they each have their own kind of specialty that they bring, whether it's going to be security and networking or, you know, some other piece to it. So I've been able to assemble the team at the rate that I've been acquiring the businesses. First business, it was just me and an engineer. You know, second business, it's me and the same engineer, but, you know, we're starting to expand out, and then it kind of grew as we got bigger. So you know, kind of customize and kind of cut it up how you want when you build it yourself. And that's what I like, because to me, I had a lot of bosses that I did not like in the corporate world. So I try and manage the opposite of them. And so for our group, that means we have no standing meetings. We work almost entirely asynchronous. Everything we do, you know, we try and keep it so that people can work anytime, anywhere they want. We always say we were remote before that was even cool. But that's something that we've all wanted to build together. And so that's what's kind of nice about this, is you get to kind of plan it out yourself.
On the financing side, let's talk about that. When you're buying a business, are you raising capital? First and foremost, are you getting any bank debt on these acquisitions when you're going in? Are you also getting any seller carryback financing? And also, you're raising capital from private equity or investor friends that want to be involved in your business?
All of those are possible. So there's the friends and family route. There is debt financing, there's seller financing. Now, online business financing is nowhere near as mature as traditional financing or real estate financing. There are just a few firms that are taking the leap at it because it is riskier. So there are firms, it's pretty high interest debt to take it on. I've written a couple articles about how to try and handle that if you're trying to structure a deal. But one thing I would encourage, if someone hears this and thinks, hey, I'd like to do this at some point in the future, is you should save money in the same way that you're going to save for a down payment for your house, for your first house. This might be you have to save a down payment for your first business. The SBA has also gotten involved. Finally, they're starting to approve online businesses as legitimate businesses that they will do loans for. So that's fantastic, especially, you know, your listeners will have some experience maybe going through a more of a government process. So there's a few ways to do the financing, but you might really have to depend on friends and family, have the seller carry a little bit of a loan, maybe get a little bit of the high interest rate financing. Yeah, bring your own money and you kind of stack it all up. But it's not quite as mature as traditional financing just yet, but it's getting there.
From what I've seen, the seller carry seems to be pretty prevalent, particularly in these businesses that have not a lot of eyeballs on them in terms of who's going to come and buy it in the future. So, and I think that goes back to the building the portfolio. You increase your multiples of the value of the business by buying other businesses alongside of it. It's like how I, you know, it's a portfolio play where you can, one, you might have one bad egg in the, one bad apple in the apple cart, but well, not necessarily bad, but you know, it's buoyed by the other really good ones or vice versa, you know? So it's the portfolio play at the end of the day. So as we come to the end of the show here, what's 2024 and beyond look like for you? Are you trying to grow your, you know, assets under management? Are you trying to buy new businesses? What's the sort of the next 12 to 24 months look like?
Yeah. So the last 12 months have been a little bit of the market really froze up when the interest rates changed. I did an acquisition at the end of 2022 that I could not even do today. The way it worked, it wouldn't even work. So it's loosened up a little bit now. Multiples have come down, which is fantastic. And so if you have cash, you know, this is a really good time to acquire because sellers are always trying to look to sell.
Did you hear that, everyone? the reason I say that, and sorry to interrupt you, is that we've also seen the freeze in the multi side and the real estate side. It's a freeze throughout. And so guys, if you've been listening to this podcast for a long period of time, listen to our state of market, we're coming out of a freeze. It's a really good time to be buying. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Keep going with your train of thought.
It's, you know, so many things are similar in these. There's sellers that have been waiting and waiting and waiting, and at some point they can't wait any longer. So it's a good time. So the answer is I am looking to acquire. I've got at least two that I would like to do within the next quarter. And that, you know, when you're taking on the operations of a software business, you can't just keep rolling at one every quarter. So if I acquire one or two over the next quarter, like that'll be it for me for the year, because we have to absorb it, start working with it, figuring out what we're going to do with it, which is incredibly fun for me, right? And that's why I'm out of bed every morning. But yeah, so for me, next 12 months, looking to acquire and then kind of keep my eyes open in case that perfect business shows up that you have to buy, even if it's the wrong time for you, but it fits into your portfolio so well.
Mm-hmm. One question I forgot to ask is profit margins. Are you looking at any types of profit margins? Because again, from the acquisitions point of view, being in the syndication world, being in any buy and sell world, like you're constantly having to look for that next deal, right? To get the fees or whatever, to buy an existing business, I'm sure it's also the same, but they might be a little bit more cash flow positive. So are you looking at certain profit margins to say, hey, you know, this can sustain me and my lifestyle and I don't have to go acquire or sell a bunch of businesses to keep the lights on?
Yeah. So one thing I think that is very different about our industries is what the profit margins are. Ours are significantly higher. And I think that reflects the significantly higher risk in owning an asset with no physical assets to it. So you are correct that I can look at it and say, okay, I'm going to add this many, you know, numbers to my income based on this business, where it's a little bit tighter in real estate, I think, for the net income, where you kind of, like you said, you kind of have to keep rolling forward with it. One of the things I encourage engineers to look at is, if you can go out there and replace an entrepreneur engineer that was making $150,000 with this business, you suddenly have a $150,000 job, except you're the boss. I mean, that's kind of a nice deal instead of having the same $150,000 job where someone's telling you what to do all the time on projects you kind of don't care about. That's what I encourage engineers to do. And so when you can look at a business that's got that kind of profit margin, we're in the 50% and above.
Wow.
And you can look at some software that, once it's running, you know, as you know, there's no incremental cost to adding customers with software. So right. Every single customer is 99% profit margin. So yeah, it's kind of a different conversation in this asset group. But again, I recognize there is a risk to it. COVID knocked out quite a lot of online businesses that were doing fantastic, and then their wedding dress store is over, you know, and so that's kind of the trade-off that you have to make. So yeah, we go back to the normal, the things you're supposed to do, you know, try and diversify, try and think ahead of what the risks are going to be. But yeah, the profit margins can be pretty amazing in these businesses.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, mate, at the end of every show, we like to dive in the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Sure, let's do it.
Mate, question number one, what is a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
I absolutely can't move forward if I'm not exercising every day. I feel it mentally, physically, spiritually, everywhere. It's something that my younger self would not have believed, but that is true.
People looking on YouTube, we can see your awesome home gym in the background. I'm very envious of that home gym. I want one myself. I know, trying to carve out time to get to the gym, work out, home. It's a 2-hour ordeal. You know, having something
in
the backyard.
So that's how far it is from my office, right?
And you got some decent sized weight, mate. You got some decent sized 10 back there, I can see. So awesome stuff. Question number two is, who's the most influential person in your career to date?
I'm a father. Fantastic. Fantastic at helping me understand that you're not going to know what you're going to do at 20. And don't feel bad if you don't know at 25. And don't feel bad if you're at 30 and you're still trying to figure it out. Just keep at it. And it took me till my late 30s to see this as what my career was going to be. And so that's a long time. And it hurts your soul a little because you feel like you're missing your passion and you're like, what am I doing? Sometimes it takes time. Some people figure it out at 16 and some of them at 36.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Question number three, and this is going to be interesting for you. Like, I ask this question all the time to real estate investors, but they usually give me some, you know, whatever answer. What's the most influential tool in your business? Now, when I say tool, it could be a physical tool like a journal or a phone, and usually on the real estate side, a phone, everyone says phone, or it could be a piece of software that you can't run the business without. Given that you're in SaaS, I assume you'd have some pretty cool ones that you run the business with.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, I guess my first thought was, you can almost never find me without my laptop as a tool. And that is, you know, there's some people that can get away with the phone or the iPad or something else. I carry, it's actually behind me. I've got a bag that I carry with me everywhere. It's always laptop because it allows me to communicate pretty fast with everyone in the manner of which that I seem to do well. So I hate to say it's such a boring thing like that, but software changes, tools change. I can't think of any tool that I'm still using that I used a decade ago, right? Other than email. Those might be the two killer things, man. It's email, and everyone keeps talking about the death of email. And I swear it is the best way to get sales. It's the best way to communicate. So yeah, I'll go with those two, even if that might be boring.
No. That's awesome. That's awesome. Question number four, in one sentence, what has been the biggest failure in your career? What did you learn from that failure?
Not quitting and doing my quarter life crisis earlier.
Hmm.
The fear of trying to make that change. So one thing that is a challenge with engineers is we get a bit of golden handcuffs because we make so much. Mm-hmm. You can't, a lot of industries, you can try and move laterally. You can switch careers and you're roughly in the same income range. It's really hard for us. When you get to middle and senior engineer, it's really hard to move because there's nowhere else you can go. So you're trained, you've spent all this time in software or in development. So to get the courage to make that change, it's incredibly hard. And I think everyone looks back and says, I should have done it earlier. I don't know if we can, you know, sometimes your body and your mind needs the time to get ready. But that's something that I always look back and say, that was probably a mistake to wait that long.
People say that, but I think some people kick themselves about that. And I also think it's like, it was meant to be, you know, your pain builds so much that it forces you to take the action.
Yeah.
And don't beat yourself up when you're looking back on it 5 years from now going, geez, I should have done that earlier. Like, yeah, but you weren't in the pain point that you were. Yeah. It took you that long to get to that point. And I know engineers, being in one myself, you analyze to the cow sheds and back, and you won't, you know, before you actually make the jump and sort of, you know, not all lights are going to turn green at the same time. So, yeah.
And boy, you're right. Like it piles up, you know, and I remember when I left it and it was just, I just couldn't do it anymore. And I didn't care how bad it was going to be the next day where I, you know, I hadn't saved any money. You know, I had no idea how I'm going to pay for my apartment. It just, you hit that pain point. But up until that pain point, you're still learning things, you know, and now I look back and there's so much I learned in the corporate career. One of those messages I don't want to get across is like, you can actually learn a ton in the corporate career that really help you as an entrepreneur. So don't think you need to jump out at 19 years old. Like one of my biggest advantages is I did 20 years corporate. It's just, I also could tell that I wasn't going to do 40 years.
I 100%, one of the stories I talk a lot about on the show is that as a structural engineer, I took that skill set and went and worked for a developer who was a real estate, you know, building projects. I had a skill set that could continue paying me a corporate wage and I could learn on the job to build the skill set to go out and start my own business. And that is important, right? And
absolutely,
particularly when you're raising money and you're starting a business and it looks cool that these young guys in hoodies and stuff, having a little bit of time in the corporate world will only make you better. It actually expands your networking because usually the first couple of investors in your startup, in your business and whatever it is, are going to be guys from the water cooler. You know, who worked with you and trust you and understand that. Some of my biggest investors are guys I used to work with. So,
and guess who your customers are going to be? They're in the corporate world, right? That's right. Where you're getting real money. You're not selling to just people that are listening on YouTube. Like, you got to sell back into corporate to get real money.
Right.
So that's you're learning who your customer is as well. Why things move so slow? Why decisions take so long? Who do you got to find the right people? You know, you can't figure that out unless you've seen it.
Michael, last question. Where can people reach you to continue the conversation? They want to be in your sphere. Where do they go?
Easy enough. It's just michaelfrew.com. So my last name is spelled F-R-E-W. Reach out anytime. I'm not selling anything. I just try and write articles about how to help engineers acquire a business, kind of an acquire that career. So if anything might be helpful or if you want to chat, just reach out to me on my website.
Awesome stuff, my friend. Well, look, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. I want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think just in general, my curiosity about how other people make money, right? And for those people listening to this show for the last 6 or 7 years, you know, I don't pretend to know everything. And it's so cool and refreshing to hear that there's just so many ways to make money out there. Listening to your story and understanding what you've done and the becoming an expert in that field and then going out and finding another way to do the same thing that you already love, because you clearly do love that operations, is really, really awesome. And I think it's kudos to you to being able to make the synergy of the two come together, right? And so you didn't go burn the ships and say, screw this background. You actually used it because you like it, and then you created a successful business out of it rather than exchanging your time for money, which sounds like, you know, a lot of people can get, you know, the golden handcuffs on in the corporate world and never, ever leave. So, mate, did I leave anything out?
No, I think that's it. We really had a great time. We really covered a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, mate. Well, again, thank you so much for jumping on today's show. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up very, very soon. Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Michael. Remember, if you want to check out anything he is doing, head over to michaelfrew.com. That's F-R-E-W.com. Check out everything he's doing over there. Completely blew my mind. SaaS products. My business partner has been in the SaaS world, and it's just another level. And you obviously have to do the 10,000 hours to understand how to go acquire these things. You can't just be a real estate investor and be like, I'm just going to go and acquire a SaaS product. But there are ways in which you can do it, and you can learn from people like Michael. So please check him out over there. I want to thank you all again for coming and joining and listening in for this show this week. We're all about increasing your financial IQ. If you do love this show, the easiest way to give back is to give us a 5-star review on iTunes or tell your friend about the show, because we're all about expanding our audience. We're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.